Hey, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati.
Hey!
Wait, what?
Hey, that's not plural. What's going on? You guys, hi! Welcome, Jason. Jason's my co-host this week. Well, we'll take some mini spring break. So we had to bring back, the goat.
The goat, yeah. No, hey, thanks for, I'm glad to be back. I was excited when you asked me to jump in for Burl. Jason Williams, by the way, sports columnist, Inquirer, along with Sherry Coolidge, Cincinnati City Hall reporter, and the co-host of this podcast. I'm just the guest host. Sherry, and I'm even honored that you would have me kind of introduce, like just like old times. So
I love just like old times. That's where I'm at in my life, Jason.
Me too. you and I, of course, we still stay in touch a lot. We still talk a lot of politics. I still keep close tabs on politics, and you help me do that. But before we jump into talking about politics, yeah. I want to let everyone know who our special guest is today, and that's Xavier President Colleen Hanich. Doesn't do many interviews, and so we're really excited to have Colleen, as she asks us to call her on our podcast today. I stay tuned for our discussion with Dr. Hanich, because there's some big things going on at Xavier, things I don't think has ever really happened at Xavier before, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We've got some good questions, I think, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation with her.
I am super excited myself. I heard her speak last year. She is a woman in this community that I greatly admire. And yes. That's one of my favorite parts of my job, because now I get to talk to her today.
Definitely. But before we jump over and bring Dr. Hanich on from Xavier, let's talk a little politics. The big story right now in local politics.
I know, we're pulling Jason back in, you guys. Just because he's over on the sports column, he knows everything that's going on with politics. When he says we talk, I'm not joking. We still talk about all the politics. So now we're just going to do it with you.
Well, it certainly continues to be a huge passion of mine. It's always been a passion of mine. Even when I was a sports writer the first time around in my career, local Cincinnati, greater Cincinnati politics, Ohio politics. I've always just kept close tabs on it because I'm passionate about it. But the big story here is the sale of the Cincinnati Southern, is it the Cincinnati Rail Line?
Cincinnati Southern Railway.
Railway.
Or as the case might be, not the sale of it?
Or not. That's exactly right. You bingo. I mean, that thing, as it's been told to me by sources, is DOA. And I'm an opinion writer, and I will inject my opinion here. To me, is the right decision. Selling off a valuable asset like this for the city at the expense of something that provides ongoing revenue forever for the city of Cincinnati. And also, when you're talking about this sale, it really reeks of a lot of consultants and a lot of lobbyists, a lot of lawyers with their hands out here and who are going to make a lot of money off this. This is not being pushed by the citizens. And so I think this is a good thing. But Sherry, I've kind of filibustered this conversation.
Already. No, you're good. You're saying things that I'm hearing.
I'm very passionate about this topic, because I think we've seen this so many times in this town before. The discussion of selling off valuable public assets, this discussion, I covered it, you covered it. When there was talk back in 2012, 2013 of selling off the city's parking system, that ultimately didn't happen. And here we are again on this, or maybe we're not on that anymore. But anyway, I'm going to be quiet and let you kind of tell us where things are at.
I mean, the quick synopsis is, it's an independent board that oversees the railroad. Cincinnati owns its own 337-mile railroad. Way back in the day, Cincinnati, built this railroad because they didn't want to be left out of the carrying of goods. This was always created to make sure Cincinnati was in the mix, and it was very important. And it was only ever to be sold if for sinking debt and to pay off sinking debt, which, that's old time language. So we're talking 150 years ago. What that meant was in the most dire crisis that Cincinnati could ever face is when this railroad should be sold. And we're not in that space at this moment. But they want to change the language of that law that governs it. Like they want, so the railroad board's like, this is a really good deal for us. I will say, I have seen the valuations and everything. And I do think that the railroad board chair, Paul Muthing, I'm not going to weigh in on whether this is a good decision because I have like 9 million stories coming, you guys. But I will say that having seen now, not at the front end of all of this, but after public records requests, having seen some of the things, I feel like the deal was negotiated for a very fair price for what's happening with the railroad. But they wanted to make sure that they're going to create a truck. The plan is we're going to sell the railroad for $1.6 billion to Norfolk Southern. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that railroad. And then we're going to create a trust. Investments off that trust would then go to city, you know, infrastructure projects was the goal. The state had to change language in the law that said it can go to current infrastructure problems and not debt. And that is one step. Then it kind of goes to council for a rubber stamp vote to get to a ballot. Then it goes to citizens. We are literally stopped at this first step. The state lawmakers have had a lot to say. By the time this podcast airs, you will see a story on Cincinnati.com about, you know, kind of the ins and outs of what the state lawmakers are saying. But, you know, Norfolk Southern safety record has a concern, and the idea of spending this kind of money, you know, the state lawmakers are really hesitant to give that power. It's not 100% dead. What Jason's saying is really kind of what's floating around is actually happening behind the scenes, but that's not full on. It's not dead yet.
But it needs the state legislature to basically sort of trigger the whole domino effect of whether it can get to the sale. And I want to point out, there's a battle here, even just among legislators here from Cincinnati. State Rep Bill Seitz, who his day job, so to speak, is a lawyer for Densmore. Densmore is the Densmore lobbying arm, has the lobbying contract with Norfolk Southern on with the city or on this deal. Is for the sale of the railroad. On the flip side, and I want to be clear,
brought into this conversation before city council members. Now, city council members, as I said, this is an independent board. They didn't even know what was happening. They were told at the very last second before the announcement. They did not know. Bill Seitz knew before them.
I want to be clear, too. Like, those are, I'm just stating facts there. I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just stating the facts of the situation. And then on the other side is State Senator Bill Blessing from Coleraine Township, who's really been the hero, so to speak, on the not selling it side. Bill Blessing is a studious, quiet, diligent, policy-focused lawmaker. He is not a loudmouth Twitter, flame-throwing, bomb-throwing Twitter person. He's a very thoughtful lawmaker, and he has really, really studied this and spent a lot of time on this, and it has been his influence that has basically led this thing to pretty much being on life support, because he has the ear of the state Senate President Matt Huffman. And certainly the state Senate right now is saying, no, we're not doing anything on this. And then you go over to the House where Bill Seitz is, and I'm not sure where other lawmakers are, but I'm just saying there's a little bit of a butting of heads just among lawmakers, state lawmakers that are from right here in Hamilton County. But as of right now, the state Senate is basically saying, no, this isn't going to go forward. And Bill Blessing is a big reason why. And, I give him credit for it, because he's, again, like, I want to be clear, like he's a very sincere, genuine person in the legislature. And I'm not saying anyone else is or isn't. I'm just saying that, you know, he's a person you don't hear a lot from, but he's really, really focused in on this issue. He's very passionate about it. He sees the concerns with it, the concerns of selling a valuable asset, a public asset like this. Who's going to make money on it in the immediacy? And then on the other side, too, when you have this trust that's going to manage the money, and that's an unelected body, all the concerns around that. There are so many layers of this, Sherry. You're doing a fantastic job of covering it. But there's just so many stories. And one of the, just one of the stories is Bill Blessing's role here. And his role has been so far, even though he's not made a lot of headlines, certainly behind the scenes, he's been a real key figure here in making sure right now that this thing doesn't go forward.
But here's what I want to say about that. So right away, when this is all kind of coming finally to light and everything, it seemed pretty secretive. And I heard that, you know, he had had some questions. So called him up, answered right away. And he sent me public record, the memo that he kind of sent to his co-workers in the State House, just asking questions. That is not a crime. That's his job. Yep. And it was kind of really treated as like, well, why would he do this? And it would have been easy for him to say, my fellow Republican Bill Seitz, you know, he thinks this is a good idea. So do I. But instead, he read the legislation and he just had a lot of questions before it's even made public to all the public. And he's getting like, where's the wind blowing? And what do people think? He had some very basic, like he could be a reporter kind of questions. That memo was incredible. There was a lot of the questions that I had. He just wanted to know the answers. And once he started getting answers, we've really gone down more of a path now of really where he stands on things. Mm-hmm. But from the get-go, Bill Blessing did his job. And he asked questions about something he was asked to vote on. To me, also, by the way, I have been, you know, really, you know, talking about this deal in terms of one of the biggest things I've ever seen come through to impact the city. Like, if this decision affects the city for the rest of time, the rest of time. This lease for 142 years has been bringing in lease money from Norfolk Southern. If we sell it, it does create this possibly amazing trust. We're just asking still some questions about how that's all going to work, what that investment money looks like. But either way, affects the city forever. And you can't say that about a lot of the decisions. Like, okay, abatements is coming through, residential abatements. That's a 3-year plan. They're like, we'll look at it in 3 years. We don't like it, we'll change it. Yeah, because a lot of decisions. Last council did something. We don't like it. Okay, we'll change it. This is, there's no going back. No going back.
You are so on this, Sherry. You're nailing it. And you're really, I mean, you're really speaking. And this is, This is who you are at heart as a reporter, is that, you know, you're looking out for the taxpayers, you're looking out for, you know, the public, the citizens. And really, to me, this is that's our job. That's our job as watchdogs of the public, no matter what beats we cover, whether we cover sports or City Hall or the State House or, you know, Xavier basketball or whatever. You know, certainly, you know, it's our jobs as journalists to be watchdogs and to, you know, certainly serve our readers. And I, you know,
I do think I want to say, if for some reason that this really is dead, like we hear like a definitive decision, here's the thing, we're on a very tight time frame to get it. It does have to go to citizens. The problem here right at the moment really is there's still questions. It doesn't seem like it's going to get done. So when we say it has to be voted on, then laws take 90 days to go in effect. Then you have to get something on the ballot is 90 days before the election day. Like, sure, it's only March, but in that scheme of those 90-day timeframes after and before, it's a very tight window. So if it doesn't happen this year, I don't expect that we won't ever talk about the railroad again, because I think that we'll definitely be talking about this again next year. The lease doesn't end until the end of 2026. It has a lot of provisions about starting talks now in case the lease discussions had to go to arbitration. So it did start early, turned into a sale instead of a lease, but there's still time left here on what things to do. And I think that, you know, we'll see this come back next year, which, hey, guess what, everybody? That gives the city time to fill the rest of my public records request that I made on November 22nd, the day after the announcement. Yay!
And since I don't get to talk about this a lot, there's one more thing I want to add here. And that's that I think it really says a lot about the deal when you have strange political bedfellows here coming together and opposing this. You have some pretty strong conservative social and fiscal conservative. The social thing doesn't really matter on this, but the social and fiscal conservative faction around Hamilton County coming together, not necessarily literally coming together, but in agreement with sort of the far left progressive wing of the Democratic Party here in Hamilton County, all in agreement on that this is not a good idea to sell this asset. Now, that always sort of like really gets your attention because you don't see that a whole lot. And to me, that says, when you see sort of different political factions coming together in agreement, a lot of times that kind of that speaks to that this is an insidery establishment. A lot of consultant types are looking to, make money, and they're the ones that are pushing this. And so, and I'm not saying that's what's always the case, but I believe that's the case here on this situation. But you see those two kind of factions coming together in very strong agreement. And they're not wavering on that. Like, oh yeah, like, okay, well maybe this. And I agree with that. And honestly, it's good to see citizens rise up, folks from different political spectrums and viewpoints come together in agreement. And when that happens, I think that's certainly a red flag for the folks who are really pushing to try to sell this.
All right. Well, but I feel like we're still going to be talking about it, but the next time you guest host.
Anyway, let's. Good stuff, Sherry. We'll continue to follow your coverage on Cincinnati.com and the Inquirer and at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter on that topic. But now let's jump over and bring on Xavier President Colleen Hanich. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome. I don't think the timing could be any better to have Xavier President Dr. Colleen Hanich. Colleen, as you asked us to call you, how you doing?
I am doing great. I am feeling sweet 16, top to bottom. So really, very, very excited.
Well, I was out at an event on Sunday when it all happened, and every single person at the event was looking at their phone and were like, they did it. They did. It was a really nice moment.
It's been remarkable.
Let's jump right to that, Colleen. And, it was a year ago, just this past weekend, happened to be on the day, a year to the day that Xavier qualifies for the Sweet 16, was the day that you, the Xavier, reached the agreement to bring Sean Miller back as head coach. Can you just talk about that decision? And what a fantastic decision. I mean, you hired him to do exactly this, to make a deep NCAA tournament run, to really grow the team. And I got to think you got to be pretty pleased with Coach Miller and what he's done in his year on the job.
Absolutely delighted. And none of us would have anticipated, although maybe he did. I certainly did not anticipate that we would find ourselves 1 year later to the day facing down the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. So from my perspective, it has been a perfect year in terms of what he's been able to bring to Xavier. Of course, a homecoming for Coach Miller and his wife Amy and their family, but they are just such tremendous people through and through. And I think what he has asked of our young student athletes and the way in which they have responded has been a remarkable study. I've never been a coach, but I'm a parent, and seeing that has really been quite a beautiful thing to see how these young men have responded to him and bought into his vision and belief in what they might be.
And hey, you and Greg Christopher, athletic director Greg Christopher, the board worked really hard on this hire. You took a little bit of a risk at the time. You know, Sean Miller was coming off some NCAA things around Arizona. I want to make sure, be clear, all that has been cleared. Sean Miller of no wrongdoing. But do you think back on that decision and you know, do you remember kind of that process and thinking, oh goodness, like this, you know, this could go one of two way or, you know, a couple ways here and it may not be good? Or did you always from the moment sort of just feel really, really strong about this?
Both. So yeah. I felt very strong from this, but strong about this as we headed into it. And, you know, Greg and I worked very, very closely together, and we together worked with our board of trustees closely as well. Because in any event, when you're hiring a member of your community that has such a public persona to them, yep. That brings certain risk with it, whoever you're moving forward with. But I will tell you, I had the opportunity along with Greg to spend some time with Sean before this decision was made and before our board got deeply engaged in this decision. And I came away from that with absolutely no concerns. When you can look someone in the face and in eye to eye, close up, even if you don't know them, and you can just tell and take the judge, the measure of their character, I guess. And I felt very confident in my years of judging character that bit of time that I got to spend with Coach Miller assured me that we were not making a risky move, but in fact, we were making a move towards a sure thing.
Yeah. Sherry?
What do you think? I mean, Jason's written some about this in like his sports column and everything, but the things that I'm hearing like out in the community, what has he brought to the team? Like, how is he bringing something out of that? Like with a bit of it, what's a bit of advice out of this?
It's quite amazing. So yeah. Without getting too granular, you see what he's doing with individual student athletes. So look at, if you follow our team closely, and I know many who listen to this podcast do, you look at a guy like Jerome Hunter, who a year and a half ago, hadn't really found his way. And so you fast forward and Coach Miller says, look, you're going to be on the bench. You're not going to start. You're going to come off and play some key minutes for us. Jerome bought into that and played into that from the very beginning of our season and became a key piece on this team. Then how did we know, fast forward, that we would have some injuries and so on, so that he would once again return to the starting lineup and had his career high at his first NCAA game at Kennesaw State last week, you know, scoring 24 points, but just being a playmaker for us in just a remarkable way. So you take a step back and you look at how that has to happen. You have to have a young person who buys into a coach and who believes that coach is going to position him to meet his own personal goals. So we saw that time and time again this year with this team, how they went through the difficulty of a coaching transition, which is always hard on a team, and not making the NCAA after, you know, a couple of years, it just really, to see where they are now is remarkable to me. All the steps that this coach took, that the coaching team, that his staff took with him, it's just been a beautiful thing to watch, frankly.
You couldn't have said it any better, Colleen. It's been a beautiful thing to watch. I did an interview on WLW yesterday, and I talked about how this team is just—it's a locker room full of I hate to say it, like good kids. You know, I don't want to sound like a coach, but yeah. Like there's no egos. And you alluded to it there. They're coming off a coaching change a year ago. This is a talented group of guys. Most of the same guys are here. Obviously, they brought Sule Boom in. You can't overlook that, how fantastic he's been. But I got to think, from your perch as the president of the university, just the fact that not only this team is in the Sweet 16, but it's just a fun team, and it's a group of good guys who all have, you know, gone through some things last year, and all of a sudden have just kind of come together, and they're like, they don't care who gets the credit, and you know, there's no egos. And like, I think we saw that on Sunday where six guys scored in double figures. Sule Boom, you know, goes scoreless in the first half. He doesn't sulk. Like everyone picks him up, and the team wins easily and is on to the Sweet 16. From your standpoint as the president, that's got to make you feel really good when you think about the direction of your basketball program.
You know, it does, Jason. And And really, it speaks to this school generally. That is not something that's limited to our basketball team. That is just the kind of character and reliance upon each other that we call our students to be part of. There's a reason that we talk about all for one, and you see it on a basketball team. You see it on our campus. I have had the benefit over the last 2 years to see it in so many different contexts on this campus where our students lift each other up. But seeing it on that team, you don't have stats like we have around assists unless you have a team that is unselfish and lacking ego and understanding that each one of them is a part of a greater whole and has a part to play. And sometimes the shots are falling. Adam Kunkel went 5 for 5, 3-pointers. I mean, which I understand, at least what I heard at the time, is an NCAA record. And there he was. I mean, he just fired them again and again and again. But sometimes it isn't your day and your teammates are there to pick you up. That messaging comes from our coach. It comes from our coaching staff. I like to think it comes from me. It comes from our AD, Greg Christopher. And it is just how we roll at Xavier, top to bottom. So that has been one of my lessons over the last 2 years.
You're looking to grow, and segueing, sticking with athletics, but you're looking to grow the university. You've started, Xavier has started women's lacrosse. Obviously, you hire Sean Miller. You're now looking at upgrades to CentOS Center. I know that was announced recently. Can you talk about, in the grand scheme of growing the university, how you see athletics as playing a part of that? Obviously, you know, I should also say there's been discussions about maybe restarting football. So can you talk about the role athletics play in your vision for growing the university?
Sure. So athletics at a school like Xavier, athletics plays a very large role because what it really speaks to, not only to those students who might want to continue whatever they've done in high school at the college level in athletics, be that at on an NCAA team or on a club sport, whatever the case may be, but also for students who maybe are not athletically inclined or don't want to continue that after high school, but want to be part of a school that really embraces that and celebrates that, want to be part of that excitement. Before I was at Xavier, I spent 6 years as a president at LaSalle University in Philadelphia and got to have a front row seat to Villanova and seeing what Villanova did as they won 2 national championships in the time that I was at LaSalle. And really, that is a tide that lifts all boats. It draws a certain attention to your school. Think about some of the Cinderella stories. Think about St. Peter's last year. The whole world was on internet saying, where is St. Peter's? What is that school? And what are they doing? I mean, just that exposure alone, athletics brings an exposure to everything else that you do in a way that is second to none. I think the other piece about athletics, at least as a president, that is important to me is athletics speaks about the culture of your school in a smaller setting. So the way that we build a lacrosse team, I mean, you need to come to one of those games. Those are remarkable students and remarkable coaches. And what Meg Decker has done as a head coach to build that team and to build those young women to believe that, I mean, as she said to me, like they're playing for an NCAA championship. That's what they think is within the scope of reality. So just to be part of that for these young people as they achieve their dreams and to see the benefit, the residual, the halo that they bring to a university, everything from enrollment to fundraising to just the overall student experience that our students have, it is wonderful to have a robust, well-supported athletics program like we do at Xavier.
All right, Jason mentioned it in passing. We have to really ask.
Yeah.
Are you going to bring a football team to Xavier University?
See, I thought I had sort of skated by that one really like smoothly. I thought I was pretty cool with that. We are certainly looking at our sport mix right now for some of the same reasons that I just talked to you about. Football, as you know, we are undefeated since 1972, which is a real badge of honor for many of our alumni. But football is something that really would broaden some of the excitement on our campus. You know, it wakes up the fall season in a way that nothing else does. I think, you know, obviously we're not talking about Ohio State football or anything or UC football. I mean, they're just remarkable programs. But even looking at football, we would be looking at a non-scholarship model and have looked at a league very specifically that focuses on a group of schools that look a lot like us. It's the Pioneer Football League, and Dayton's in it, Butler's in it. So some really good peer schools for us. It just brings some excitement to campus. It supports enrollment plans. It is just a win across the board. So have we made a decision on this? Not yet, but it is something that we are continuing to look at really, really closely with a decision later this year.
If you could have your dream come true about this, if you could have it, how soon would it be? In a dream scenario.
Well, boy, you've really put me on the spot because it would be this fall, which is completely not possible. I think as we think about football as a possibility, it's probably 2 years out or 3 years out at least, just because, you know, you're looking at building a stadium. There's a whole bunch of pieces that have to come into play and you want to do it right. We did lacrosse absolutely the right way. We had our head coach hired more than a year before the program launched. So she was building a recruiting path, or recruiting context, and so on, and building her team. There's no need to hurry into this or rush into it. So it will take a little bit of time. But there's a lot of excitement about it in the conversations I'm having.
I don't know. I do feel like you might be the lucky charm. Like you were talking about all those basketball wins. I don't think there's something there.
Well, the funny part is we went to Greensboro last week, of course, to kick off the NCAA. And there's my husband and I. We've never been to the NCAA. And I'm just saying to him, look cool. Do not look like this is our first time here. Like act like we're here every year. Do not say something stupid or look not cool. So it's pretty darn exciting that the first time I've been exposed to this, here we are at the Sweet 16. But I got to tell you, we're playing for a Final Four. So this weekend is just a step along that pathway.
Would you, it sounds to me like, and I want to ask you that, like you would characterize this football discussion as, would you characterize this as a very serious discussion?
I would. Yeah. I would characterize this as a very serious discussion. Our board has not, it has not been presented in a decision-making piece mm-hmm. yet to our board, but it is something that we are continuing to do significant research on and seeing what might be possible. So yeah, this is not something we're just fooling with. We have got one major, we've got one very major decision that is lined up for May 5th, and that is whether or not to launch a medical school. So our board is facing that on May 5th. And I think once we get through that decision, this will be one of the next ones to talk about with real seriousness.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yes, let's talk about that for sure. I mean, this community is known for its amazing hospitals. Like there is no better community to grow our future caregivers than this community. Yep. Christ Hospital, UC, like the TriHealth Mercy. This is an amazing area.
Children.
So this seems like it makes sense. How did this discussion start?
Well, it's a conversation that you know, that we've been having for a while. As you might or might not know, higher education is going to face some white water in the near future as you know, the birth rate has fallen off following the 2008 recession and so on. So we're looking at a smaller pie and trying to maintain our size of our slice. So one of the things that we have that on the one side, and the other side, you have Ohio that continues to be underserved in some ways in terms of the number of physicians that we have here. And there are rural areas in particular that don't have good access to primary care. So we are looking at a College of Osteopathic Medicine. So it's very similar to an MD, which is what UC has, except that there is the majority of students that graduate from osteopathic end up in primary care positions. So they often will stay in the area where they studied. So it really brings some significant economic impact to the region and health care support to the region. I am working closely with all of those health systems that we talked about, the five major health systems that are in this region. They have been tremendous partners to Xavier for a long, long time, not just on this project, but have been incredibly encouraging about the possibility of introducing osteopathic medicine here in Cincinnati. I've had the opportunity to talk with Dr. Pinto about this at UC, and he is just a remarkable partner on everything and has been very supportive of this as well. So as I said, it goes to our board in May. and we will know further if this is the right moment to do it. Then we are going to dive into this world.
Wow. And Jim, and when it comes to growing university, why in medical school and why not, I don't know, like some other school? But what is sure. it about, what is it about the really honing in on a medical school that is, that would be part of growing the university?
Sure. So Xavier has, there's a number of reasons, but one of the first reasons is internal, and that is Xavier has a program in biomedical sciences, like a pre-med program for undergrads that is almost 100 years old. Our outcomes are tremendous. Our students get admitted into medical school at about twice the national average rate. So it is just a phenomenal pathway into medical school. So we have this established strength in health sciences. We have a remarkable nursing program. We have exercise science. We have health HSA, which is health sciences administration. I mean, Xavier has just always had a very strong foothold, occupational therapy, and so on. So for us, this is a very natural extension of some of the work that we're already doing. And the external part is it lines up beautifully with some needs of this region. So just some needs to have additional support for medical education that you know, feeds these great hospital systems. If you don't have primary care doctors that are referring you to, you know, specialists that then use the hospital system for your gallbladder surgery or whatever it is, your hip replacement, then the whole system kind of falls down. So this would be to support better health outcomes for Ohio and for this region more generally. So our strength lines up with Ohio and the region's needs just beautifully.
I mean, so you talk about for the football program, like building a stadium, like what kind of investments? It seems like there's an upfront huge investment of like starting something. What does that look like?
Well, luckily this is a podcast, so you can't see the gray hair that is coming into my head in numbers every single day. It is a huge startup cost, especially on the medical school front. There are regulators, an accrediting body that looks really carefully at making sure that you're going to take care of these students. So you have to set money aside for years. You have to build a facility. You have to have leadership, your dean in place, all of that. Years before that first student crosses the threshold into medical studies. So yes, the startup costs for whether it's football or a medical school or anything else, you know, projects worth doing are going to require some pretty significant investment in the front end. So that's part of what our board is measuring and weighing and looking at the return on that investment, as well as just seeing an opportunity. I mean, Xavier is one of the strongest Jesuit Catholic universities in this country, and being able to bring that mission to these students and to future doctors is just a remarkable opportunity.
These are big and bold. They're beyond ideas. I mean, these are a vision, a medical school. I got to go back, you know, almost 2 years ago, you started on the job. You've been on the job nearly 2 years. Were these big, bold visions that you cast in the interview process when you came in, or when you were up for the job? Did you put these out on the table and say, this is what has to happen to grow this university?
So you're right. I've only been here just about 2 years, but I've been a college president for 15.
Yeah.
So for my perspective, having an opportunity to bring that experience to Xavier allowed me to sit with that search committee and with the board at the beginning saying, look, I'm just going to be completely frank. I'm not interested at this stage in my career in what I believe will be my final career stop. I am not interested in status quo, keeping, you know, a university moving forward and whatever. I'm only interested in big swings. I have been living and learning and watching. And before my 15 years as a president, I was a law professor and then an attorney before that. So I've, over all of that time, really built some strong views about how to position a university for success. What I found at Xavier was a culture meaning my senior team and my board, that were absolutely ready for that. I have the benefit of having followed remarkable leaders. So Father Jim Hoff, two presidents ago, Father Michael Graham, who is legendary as my immediate predecessor, laying all the groundwork for some of these big swings. Father Hoff decided to build the Cintas Center over 20 years ago when so many at the time said, you've got to be kidding me. Like basketball, Xavier's going to be a basketball school? Like that's just not going to happen. It's too small. It's you know, there were a million reasons. Well, look at us now. And we have really turned this university in a completely different direction. And many will point to that big idea. So I like to think that when I came to this board, I really gave them a really clear choice as a candidate and said, you can get presidents that are good at all sorts of different things. The strength that I am going to bring is the accumulation of 15 years of this work and hopefully bringing some really bold swings that come with it. And I think we're seeing some of that start to unfold. But again, if you don't have the right team in place, you don't have the right board, forget it. And luckily I have both of those tremendous attributes here.
Love it, love it, love it.
Okay, so how soon, like, go dream scenario, you start a medical school.
Mm-hmm.
I like dream scenarios. How soon?
The soonest that the accreditors will allow us, if everything goes our way, we approve it this spring and the first class comes in the fall of 27, which is a long time. But, it's a very significant building that has to be up and you're building curriculum, you're hiring faculty, you're doing all of that work. So it's fall of 27 would be the entering of our first class. They would graduate in 2031, which is Xavier's 200th anniversary. So it's absolutely perfect.
You're talking about doing bold things. And, one of those things is the university announced, was it last week or recently, about having Ohio Supreme Court Justice Joe Dieters, longtime Hamilton County prosecutor, come on and correct me his exact role, but
Justice in residence, right?
Justice in residence, yes. Yeah.
That's I've right. known Joe Dieters a long time. And when I read that story along with everyone else, I didn't see it like on any planners or anything. And I was like, Justice in residence, a new title.
Got a nice ring to it.
He and his family have been a long time. I know Xavier basketball season ticket holders and supporters. And can you talk about bringing it's weird to say Justice Dieters on. just that role and the impact and sort of the process of the decision to bring him on in that role.
Sure. So Joe Dieters has been a part of the Xavier family for a really long time. He's also a Xavier parent and someone that, I met very early on in my time here before he was appointed to the bench. So I have had real admiration for what he's been able to accomplish in his career, partly because we have the same background as lawyers. So, I'm always very interested to see how that has unfolded. When the opportunity came to appoint him, this is a volunteer position. This is something that essentially, he's on our campus making himself available to talk with our students. Xavier has a long history of sending students to law school after they graduate from here. We have a couple of programs in particular that have led to many legal students coming out of Xavier. One of them is our PPP program. And Justice Dieters really demonstrated an interest in working with our students and helping to bring new ways of thinking and new ideas to them as they are crafted into future leaders for tomorrow. So it was a great opportunity to me and a real feather in Xavier's cap to be able to have a justice in residence because we don't have a law school. So that you often will see a justice in residence position at schools that have law schools, but it's very rare at schools that don't. So I am so thrilled and delighted to have him here. He's a bit of a lightning rod for controversy, I think is fair
what?
To say. I think I've only been here a short time, but I'm picking up on that. And I embrace that. So I have a very, very strong view about universities. They cannot be places of groupthink. universities must be marketplaces of ideas where we are forced to encounter ideas and views and perspectives that not only make us think, but ideally that make us uncomfortable. And that's what I am hoping to have. I am hoping that when we get to the point where Justice Dieters is involved in panels and speeches and so on our campus, all of which is ahead, that it will, you know, create an opportunity where students especially are encountering things that they really disagree with. He has strong views on everything from bail reform to the death penalty and how we support victims of crime. And it's not for me whether I agree or disagree with any of those views. It's about the young people that we serve at this Jesuit Catholic University and making sure that they have the opportunity to hear those views, to think about them critically, and to form an opinion. That's the only way that we are meeting our obligation as higher education. If they all come here and are just fed one steady diet of one view of the world, and then they go out and graduate, we failed. What we need to do is have them facing ideas that make them uncomfortable so that they can learn how to encounter those ideas and shape their own values in the meantime. So I'm grateful that he's willing to partner with us and that he will bring some just tremendous resources to our students.
Did he approach the university or did you approach him, having known him?
Well, it was a combination. We were already sort of in pretty regular conversation. I have met him and seen him many times. So it was, it was a combination that he was very open to this and saw the opportunity for Xavier just at the time of his appointment. So it sort of was a two-way street, but I couldn't be more delighted. Our provost got involved right away with our dean and with some of our faculty and looking about where this might work, because this is a new role at Xavier, a new honorary position. So trying to figure out how that would be set up, everything from physically where he could sit on the campus as to some of the programming pieces. We're looking at having him involved in some panels and debates in the fall, all around this idea of the university as a marketplace of controversial and good ideas. So stay tuned, because there's obviously, I've also got a petition on my desk of students saying this was not right and this is someone who has views that we don't like. And I'm using this as a learning opportunity with our community to say, good, if I am bringing you views you don't like, then man, that's a gold star for me, because that is how we grow.
I mean, are you going to tell us you're starting a law school next?
Well,
a lot of news here, you guys.
There is a lot of news. What I am telling you is, because of the good leadership that I got to follow, Xavier is now ready for some big, big swings, and stay tuned, because this is just the beginning.
I think that's a great walk-off line right there. Is there anything else that you could think of that you'd like to add? Sort of share with our audience that's going on at Xavier in the first few years here on the job.
So it's not probably additional. We've touched on all of this, but just this relentless focus on being student-centered. We are more and more and more intentional about that and what it means to be a Jesuit Catholic university, and how we take the great work that families and parents have invested for 18 and 19 years into these young people and carry that forward at a time when there is so much challenge, whether it is political polarization or the post-COVID impacts that this generation has felt in a way that no other generation before it has. We took students at a developmental stage in their lives and we said, you can't be with your friends, no mingling, no dating, no sports, no clubs, go stay in your house, stay in your room. And how we now come out of that in a way that helps to form these young people for work and for life after college. There's just a real emphasis and focus on mental health and what that has meant, and the demands, which are unrelenting, frankly, going forward. So I guess what I say is my family and I have had the most warm welcome to Cincinnati that I could even imagine. And I am so grateful as a visitor to your country, and now as someone who has joined the city, I am just so grateful to be here and to be able to lead this university into its next chapter.
Well, you know, forgive me for not asking this. I think it's a pretty simple question. You're talking about all these growth opportunities, big, bold growth opportunities. And so what is the goal for your goal to see where enrollment gets to?
It's when this medical school is done, that will be 600 more students on our campus. So that is just the beginning enrollment growth piece. We are setting some targets, I mean, in all different areas, depending on the program, depending on a graduate, undergraduate, part-time, full-time, mm-hmm. et cetera. But all of it has one theme in common, and that is growth.
And what's enrollment at now?
It's shy of 5,000. And we will undergraduate, and then grads are hard to count. Some are doing one course every 2 years. Some are doing full time, but it's in the thousands, that number as well. So we're just going to keep getting bigger. I mean, we are still going to maintain what is so special about this campus, which is, you know, our personal, unique, one-to-one environment. Where, you know, I'm the real added benefit that we have a daughter who's a sophomore here. And so I'm seeing it as a mother through Claire's eyes also. Now she's going to hate the fact that I actually said her name publicly. But anyway, you know, just seeing the way that we meet our students where they are in such a personal way, I think it is second to none. And say that is the magic sauce of Xavier, yeah. That in this Jesuit Catholic environment where all are welcome and are all belong, we've got something very magical here. And so we're going to continue to build on it.
Well, we can't thank you enough for you taking time today to join us. And, you know, I know it's a busy time, but when is it not a busy time? But mm-hmm. certainly congratulations on your success through your tenure so far at Xavier, certainly on the basketball program success and, you know, just bringing this is fresh thinking and fresh ideas, not only to Xavier University, but to Cincinnati and greater Cincinnati. So congratulations and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you both. This has just been a real pleasure, and let's go X.
All right. Thanks again to Colleen Hannich for joining us. You know, that was a fun conversation, Sherry. And that brings us to our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And it's only appropriate that I would be setting you up on this because you are the person about town, not me. I'm the homebody. You're the person about town. What is your That's So Cincinnati moment of the week?
First of all, no one says that like you do. Like, I just can't replicate it. I just can't. I have a different tone to my voice. Like, this is why you're on 700 WLW all the time. So thank you for setting this up.
thank you for having
As I've said in, like, past segments, you know, I've been a little bit boring lately. But over the weekend, I did previous guest of ours, Mad Tree Brewing, when they were really, the alcove was really getting underway and over the Rhine. And that has just become a very special place. If you go there, you know, like smaller plates, a lot of like options for smaller plates, you can get a good meal. They have their suede, you can, that have, they, you know, gosh, Jason, when was that podcast when they were really just talking about they're going to start like canning it and everything. And it just really has taken off. And, you know, you could tell because the plants, it's all like live living walls in there and everything. And the plants are just gorgeous. And they're just so large and lush now. It's a testament to, you know, that they're themselves are thriving. But I went there over the weekend for drag brunch. And it was, their event space is incredible.
I love the living wall. I think it's such a cool thing. We have it in our new office in, at the Cincinnati Inquirer. In the lobby of our new office. So I'm really glad you got to check that out, Sherry. That was a fun podcast we did last year? But
what if it was longer ago?
I haven't checked out the alcove yet. I was just at Mad Tree a couple weeks ago. We had a little birthday gathering for a buddy. And Mad Tree never disappoints. So I'm sure the alcove never disappoints either. I appreciate you. I'm glad you got to check it out and sharing about it.
So yeah, it was a really, they they put on a great brunch, and I'm sure I'll be back there.
Well, Sherry, it's been real. It's been so fun to be back talking on the podcast with you. It feels like you and I pretty much do a podcast every day. It's just not recorded.
I know. You know who gets to hear it? Bethany and Alex, our spouses.
Bethany and Alex definitely get to hear the daily podcast between you and I.
I like to lay on my bed and I kind of lay on my stomach and then with my feet in the air and talk on the phone, just like I did when I was in high school on an actual like landline kind of like princess phone. And so like, he'll, you know, be walking by or whatever. And he'll be like, now what's going on? Cause I haven't written it yet. We're just talking about it.
Yeah. We love talking stories, story ideas, scoops, exclusives. Between the two of us, we've got lots of connections and certainly are passionate about our jobs.
Thanks for talking politics with me at the beginning, because God knows no one wants me to talk about like my sports knowledge other than knowing and being so excited for Xavier as like a person in the community and understanding what this means. Like, nobody wants me to like weigh in on like their starter team.
According to my inbox, there's a lot of people don't want me talking sports either. But anyway,
life is a columnist.
That's exactly right. Anyway, thanks to you. Thanks to Burl for allowing me to sit in his seat today while he takes a little time off, much needed time off. And Sherry, you're on Twitter at Sharon Coolidge, and I'm on Twitter at Jay Williams Cincy. So connect with us. Obviously, I don't know when I'll be back on the podcast, but you can obviously still follow us on Twitter. Connect with us there. Connect with us on Cincinnati.com. And you and Burl will be back next week.
Yeah, we'll be talking some sort of sports, I know. It's opening day next week.
It's opening day next week. So thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.